Welcome, everybody. This is the August 1st Citizens Involvement Committee meeting. I think we all know each other at this point, but from our staff, I'm Matt Stewart, the planning administrator, and we have pretty much our planning staff here: Seth, Heather, Jeff, and Matt. Austin Rao is here. Ron Brubaker is here. And Ron, I wanted to talk to you afterwards if you have a second about what you had reached out on. I got a little more information. And then Rick Bohan from Signal. So welcome everybody. You probably saw from the meeting packet that we've been pretty busy at AMATS lately. We have a whole bunch of draft, well, some are final. The preservation needs report is a final, but everything else is a draft document. We've been busy writing a lot of reports this spring and summer. So we wanted to give you a quick summary of some of those things, and then of course we can talk about any other issues. So with that, I'm going to go ahead and share my screen, and so just a very brief presentation. Our first, you guys can all see my screen, correct?
Yes.
Okay. So our first report that I'm going to talk about is our Highway Preservation Needs Report. All of these documents that we're going to be talking about today are things that AMATS does every cycle, like as we're getting started on our long range transportation plan, which this time it'll be called Outlook 2050. So it's a long range look at where we ex you know the projects we expect to fund and all of that kind of stuff. Every time we get ready to do that document, we have several input documents that go into that. Last time we talked about the active transportation plan. Highway preservation is a really important piece of that. That really is looking at what our inventory of road pavements and bridges is and how much we think it's going to cost just to maintain them. So first thing we look at is our network of roadways on our functional class system and our bridges, pavements, we're kind of holding steady in terms of condition. We're, assessing how that goes up and down each year through something we call pavement condition index. Bridge inventory, looking at how those bridges have changed. We have noticed that our poor condition bridges did go up a little bit this time since the last 5 years. So we have a lot of our bridges that are starting to age. And so all of that gets put into through some stuff that our engineer on staff works with to try to understand how much it's going to cost to maintain that system that we have. And it was kind of stark when we ran the numbers this time. We worked closely with ODOT as we put this together, but our costs were up 71% from 2019, so pretty huge increase. And of course, we've had construction costs go way up due to inflation and just the materials costs and all that kind of stuff. So anyway, 71% increase, the majority of which is with bridges. The report is in our mail packet, so maybe you've had a chance to look at that, but let's just look real quick at the different components of that. First one is our pavement resurfacing costs. We project those are going to go up about 52%. We actually changed some of our assumptions with pavement resurfacing. We used to assume for our reports that roads were resurfaced every 10 years, but we know that that's not usually the case. So we changed those to between 13 and 20 years, depending on the type of roadway. But based on that, we can estimate how often a road will get resurfaced and how much that will cost in today's dollars. So 1.9 billion just in resurfacing. We did that for like kind of a more severe level pavement replacement or reconstruction. That actually went down a little bit because we changed our assumptions from saying that, hey, we think 5% of our lane miles will be replaced to a more realistic 2%. And then finally, our bridge preservation costs. There we're looking at 4.45 billion. That nearly doubled from the 2019 estimate. And so at the end of the day, that brings us to, I believe, let me go back. I think it's $6.86 billion, at what we will need to preserve our roads and bridges. That dollar amount is actually bigger than all of the money that went toward, or that we projected on our last long range plan to go toward our highway projects, including our more aspirational projects. So it's pretty like stark and severe, but this will be kind of, as we get going on our long range plan, we'll consider this and figure, hey, either 6.86 billion or some percentage of that is what we expect we will put toward maintaining our system. So in a quick nutshell, that's what the preservation plan deals with. And before we move on to our CMP or congestion management processes, are there any questions on this?
I have one, Matt. Is my volume on?
Yes, I can hear you, Ron.
So that's not per year, right? That's
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, this is between now and 2050.
okay.
Yes.
Got it.
Are there
That
any
sounds
other? Oh, go ahead.
a little less ominous, but.
Yeah, no, I'm sorry. I'm kind of giving an abridged version of this, and I didn't specify that this is within the planning horizon. Pretty much all of these documents we'll be talking about, we're really looking at what's going to happen between now and 2050.
Got it. Matt, a quick question.
Sure.
Just as you say, those are really big numbers in terms of increases. And sometimes when I see those sorts of changes in data, I think, were they calculated right the first time, or were they miscalculated the first time, or are they being miscalculated this time? Because as you say, that's a big number.
Yep, and we shared that concern, and we even reached back out to, so these numbers get generated by ODOT providing us updates on unit costs based on the bids that they're seeing. And I think they call it like a Cheney-Fisher index or something. I don't really know the specifics of that, but I know that Amy from our staff and I reached out to ODOT and said, kind of like, these numbers are just up so much. We expected them to be up, 50%. We wouldn't have blinked an eye, but and they really stood by them and kind of showed us how they arrived at their thing, and we checked it over and like, no, I think that is legitimate. They really are seeing prices up by about that percent on their system over the last 5 years. And they gave us, spreadsheets that had several bid openings and everything like that.
Is it mostly materials, labor, all of the above?
I think it's all of the above. And I can't, I can't speak to the specifics of, how much this, how much that.
Right.
Any
I
other
noticed
questions?
that the percentages of everything that was poor or very poor was low, and that's a good thing.
On
Is that
pavement, you're
because?
talking?
Yeah. Is
Yes.
that just because those things get the most attention? When they make it down at that level, are they maybe
No, I think with
prioritized
all
or?
of these, you'll see. I mean, if you look at any of these categories here, they kind of go up and down depending on the year. I mean, generally, a lot of communities and ODOT kind of do a worst first kind of thing where the things in worst condition get more attention, but those numbers are going to vary year to year. The more important thing is the chart in the upper right corner, that's our average of pavement condition index. That's a score from 0 to 100, 100 being like a brand new road that was just resurfaced, and 0 being a road that basically isn't even a road because it's so potholed. So you can see we're kind of holding steady in that middle to upper 60s in our pavement condition index.
Do you
How
think
do
do those averages compare to, like, I guess, other averages within the state or neighboring regions?
I don't know the answer to that question. I believe we're above the statewide average, but I don't know. Do you remember, Seth? Do you know?
To be honest, there's really not a good way for us to compare the state because not
Yeah,
every
they're
county
doing
in the state
PCRs on
utilizes
the
our,
statewide.
yeah. The statewide system utilizes a pavement condition rating that ODOT governs, and that is not what we're using a pavement condition index that's based off of actual analytics that are run off of live footage that's captured and set somewhat. We capture half of our system each year, so every 2 years we've got a full system override of our network. No other MPO or county at this time that we know of is doing that same type of a process for the pavement condition index. There are some counties and some cities within the state of Ohio that are doing that, but it is not a statewide system of evaluation to be able to compare that.
So, Matt
Thanks,
and Seth,
John.
what I hear you saying is we might look at a similar table from another region and it might show better or worse numbers, but we wouldn't be able to say necessarily that that region is very different from ours, either better or worse, because we, to some
Right.
extent, being comparing apples to oranges. Is that right?
Other regions are not necessarily doing a pavement condition index giving us those numbers. Does that make sense?
Why wouldn't they be doing this?
Because it costs a lot of money.
Yeah.
But we find that it has a lot of value for us. Our
I
communities
would think
really
so.
enjoy it. It gets fed into like how we rank projects and score our projects.
Yeah, and to us, the pavement condition index that we're utilizing here is a much more realistic picture of what the roads actually look like versus the pavement condition rating that ODOT does statewide. There were a lot of various fluctuations throughout the every other year updates of the pavement condition ratings that didn't always line up with what we were seeing on the road. And that's why we chose to hire a contractor to do this for the AMATS region.
So is AMATS unique in this in the state?
We're one of the few in the state that actually pays a contractor to do this, yes.
This seems like a big deal to me. I mean, I'm pleased to hear that we do this, but this sort of data seems basic to planning to me.
The pavement condition freely available to the state by ODOT, so
Okay.
there is data out there. We
It's just
just
not as
we're seeing
granular.
in our region
Gotcha. Gotcha.
as reliable.
And there are, like Seth said a little bit earlier, there are a lot of municipalities, I think an increasing number of them across the state and even the country that are doing this kind of stuff. But it's like one municipality does it here, or maybe a county will do it or something. It's very inconsistent. But I think more and more people, now that this kind of data can be collected, there are a lot of companies that do this. I know when we went out again last year to do a new 2-year contract, we had, what, Seth, like five firms respond to it. They all kind of,
Each one had a different approach
Wow.
and a
And
different bag of
we
tricks
actually
that they were going to
have
use.
several of our municipalities in our region use, they actually, as far as I know, they all use the same firm we're using, and they do it for their whole roadway system, including local roadways. So some of them find utility in collecting even additional data beyond what we're doing for them.
Gotcha. So and then I'll get off this, but for instance, I look at the chart and more than half across the chart, more than half of our roads are fair or worse. But we, because of what you're saying, is we wouldn't be able to say, and that's actually better than the other regions, or that's worse than the other regions, because the data is, again, apple to oranges.
Correct.
Okay.
Exactly. Yeah. Like I was saying initially, I think when you look at PCR, the pavement condition rating, is that what the R is for? So I think our region is above the statewide average. I'm not
Above being
positive
better or
on
above
that,
being worse?
but I think we are. So
Okay. But above being better.
I feel like, real quick, just an aside, as we're talking about pavement condition index, I feel like I should point out that we have those ratings on our website. Now I'm really off topic. Matt, you're
No,
trying
I'm
to get
glad.
to
I was thinking of
this.
saying the same thing, Heather, actually. So I'm glad you brought it up.
So there is an updated interactive map on our website that you can get to and see those, the index at any time
Yeah,
on any of the roads.
under the reports and data tab, which is like I think the top right part of the screen, if you scroll
Yes.
down, all of the different web maps we have, including the pavement condition index web map or whatever it's called, is there. It's actually a really cool little dashboard that you can look at any road in our area, and I think they even have video logs on it and stuff. It's pretty cool. Okay.
I have a question.
Sure.
As I drive around Ohio, which I seem to do a lot of, it seems to me everywhere I look, there are construction projects. I'll see one construction project and take a detour and get into another construction project. And I'm thinking that's the benefit of that infrastructure spending bill, the bailout bill that was passed a couple years ago. Do you think at some point you'll see that reflected in these numbers, that you'll see pavement quality, pavement condition reports, whatever, start to trend up because we're doing so much work these days?
Well, this is only speculation, but part of me thinks like, yeah, there were definitely increases with the bipartisan infrastructure law. Although so much of, even though that was a really big transportation bill, so much of that is discretionary or like competitive programs. So our actual dollars coming in, like formula funding coming into regions, it is up, but it's not up like a crazy amount. So yes, from that perspective, you would think that's going up. But then like the preservation stuff I was just sharing, like, hey, costs are also way, way, way up. So it almost kind of negates any of the advantages that we're seeing in terms of more funding because the dollars just aren't going as far. So I actually wonder if these numbers might go down a little bit, but that's just my speculation.
The recent freeway projects in the area, Matt and everybody, were sponsored by ODOT. So the Central Interchange project, the project through the main line through the center of Akron, the State Route 8 bridge, those were discretionary projects using ODOT's federal funds. So ODOT sponsored those projects, and at the time that they were programming, oh, the work on the Kenmore leg, the I-76 project. If you go back almost 10 years now on some of these big projects when they were originally programmed, that was ODOT controlled federal highway money that they chose to use in Summit County. And I can't remember what year it was, 2 or 3 years ago. The programming, of course, is different than the actual construction period. But it was the most money that ODOT had ever spent in Summit County as long as they'd ever been tracking anything. And compared to the rest of the state, it was a huge percentage of the state budget when they programmed that. Just
No,
so you know.
that's a good point, Jeff. And like the investment is huge in our highway system regionally, between all those big projects Jeff just mentioned. It is kind of almost like a very much a once in a generation kind of
Yes.
thing, the
Yep.
scale of it. Okay, well, let's see. The next item on our agenda is our draft congestion management process. So this is something that we'll be talking about probably at a future CIC meeting. This time around, we didn't ask our other committees to approve anything or to even share a full draft with them, but We wanted to share some of the initial strategies that we're coming up with, as well as the list of locations that, were shown to be to have some level of congestion. So Seth is going to talk about that. I have a map here that is probably kind of hard to see, but it just shows at a region-wide level like where the areas that were that showed up as congested are within our region.
All right, thanks, Matt. The CMP is something that we develop every 4 years with the purpose of identifying congestion within the region. It also is intended to allow us to evaluate strategies for congested locations, recommend improvements, and analyze past projects for congestion impacts. It is a federally mandated process. With specific guidelines that need to be followed as part of the development. And it's required to include methods to monitor and evaluate the performance of the multimodal transportation system, a definition of congestion management objectives and performance measures, establishment of a coordinated program for data collection and system performance monitoring, establishment of identification and evaluation of anticipated performance and expected benefits of congestion strategies, identification of an implementation schedule, responsibilities and funding sources for each strategy, and implementation of process for periodic assessment of the effectiveness of implemented strategies. So AMATs use StreetLight and NREX platforms to pull data from 2022 that allowed us to evaluate how congested our network is. And the definition of congestion is actually not what it used to be. In the past, we used to analyze volume over capacity, and that was the only thing that defined whether or not a road was congested. The current definition of congestion that's been given to us by the feds is actually a percentage of free flow speed. So basically, if you were traveling down 70 or Route 8 coming through the central interchange at 2 o'clock in the morning, and you can go through at 65, 70 miles an hour. That's your maximum peak free flow speed. There's no traffic, nothing holding you back. You're able to move at that average speed. And then what it does is it compares all time windows throughout a 24-hour period as an average for weekdays and analyzes what the current average speed is for those time periods and compares it to the free flow speed. So first you have a free flow factor, which is actually the average speed divided by the free flow speed. And then you, in order to get your percent of congestion, you actually subtract that number from one to get that percentage. And what AMATs determined is roughly 35% was kind of what we would define as being mildly to moderately congested. And then anything over 55% would just be like, it's the worst in our area, but it is definitely not a let's tear this road down and build a new one that's bigger and better and faster. Because what we've found is in our region, we've got so much maintenance cost that building capacity for problems that typically are 15-minute periods that are really the major issues, 15 to 20 minute, maybe half an hour, is your worst. And it's a function of what are we willing to live with versus why is this happening? Sometimes it may be caused a congestion area. If you could really tell right kind of in the center of that map, there's a little red dot. That real little red dot is Talmadge Circle. We all know how Talmadge Circle works. And the congestion, believe it or not, is not the circle itself. It's the feeder legs going into the circle. It's where everyone's queuing up to get in. Once they get in, they flow through no problem. So, is that really a congestion problem, or is that just a symptom of the functionality of that road? So, In reality, where we're standing is we don't recommend any major volume capacity issues implementation to actually like correct any of these issues. All of the mitigation that and strategies that AMATS is recommending through the CMP fall more in the management and monitoring of those areas.
So it'd
There
be
are
things like traffic signal optimization. I'm trying to think of some other examples, like occasional, like lane, not really like building up new lanes or anything, but like turn lanes and things, more moderate things like that.
configuration and such.
Converting things to a roundabout, that kind of stuff.
Right. So that we identified 85 arterial segments, and what was our number on the freeways, Matt? 24? 24 freeway segments.
Yeah, let me look real quick. That sounds about right. Correct, 24 freeways.
Yeah, and most of which the issues only happen during one peak period.
Yeah.
A peak period could be a 4-hour window, and it really only demands 1 hour's worth of average time to be at a specific per peak percentage con of congestion in order to land on this list. And like I said before, none of these are sound the alarm, we've got a big problem issues. Every issue, if you look at it and think about it, it's really just a symptom of smaller issues that could be addressed rather than a capacity issue.
So again, Seth, a clarification, what you're saying is if something rates highly congested, that's not saying from 6 in the morning till 10 at night, it's highly suggested. What you're saying is it's that highly suggested, perhaps during a small portion of the day.
Correct. Correct. And if you look, if you have the meeting packet open, there is a column under all the different strategy recommendations where the peak periods occurred. And those peak periods are during roughly 4-hour windows. There's a peak AM, a peak PM, and then the midday. The midday runs from about 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. The peak PM is from 4 p.m. to 8 p.m., and the peak AM is from 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. It's pretty safely assumed throughout our region that anything outside of those windows is not a congestion related to volume. If you were to have some kind of a slowdown, it would be construction or accident related.
And another important thing to keep in mind when we're thinking about congestion, and you've probably gathered from Seth that we're pretty, like, from an agency perspective, like, we're okay, we're willing to live with some level of congestion. And it's not like out of laziness. It's sometimes when you fix a road for congestion, you are making travel much worse for other modes, such as bicycles and pedestrians. You're potentially introducing some major safety issues. I mean, think about where some of our region's most severe crashes are. They're often on those big, 5 and 7 lane roads throughout our region where you have 20,000 vehicles a day. So blowing up a road into a, big complex thing with dual left turn lanes and, giant intersections is not, it's not a good thing from a lot of other perspectives. And there's also a lot of evidence that when you increase capacity to build for, you can't like build your way out of congestion. That just encourages people to drive more. So it's like, we have to think of our whole system and how we want to approach congestion. So Seth, I assume that's all you had to say. Well said. Any questions for Seth? Okay.
The just quickly, that so basically what I'm hearing is this report and this map doesn't, to all of you, suggest any major changes in the region at any one of these particular spots.
That is correct. And these will be fleshed out. Like, we'll be presenting a draft report at our September meeting and then asking our committees to approve the final in December. So, stay tuned on all of that. Well, I'm sure we'll be talking with the CIC about the CMP too. So our next item was our draft planning data forecast. And this is Curtis and Seth were involved in this, and I was kind of involved on the periphery, but I can't speak to this the way that Curtis can. He understands this world a whole lot better than I do, but I'm going to try to give you a sense of what's going on with this. So this is something that, like all these other things, we do before all of our long-range plan updates. Part of the reason we do it is we develop traffic zone data for the statewide model. That's something that MPOs like AMATS have to be involved in. But we also use it as kind of just like a planning thing for our region. It also gets fed into our long-range plan, Outlook 2050. And so what we're looking at is, where is our region heading? How is employment? How is our population changing? Where do we think people are going to be living and working and those sorts of things? So we have to use the Ohio Department of Development projections. And the big news story here in my mind is ODOD has, which is the Ohio Department of Development, has predicted some pretty grim forecasts for almost all of Ohio. Growth in the Columbus area, but pretty much every other region in Ohio is seeing pretty drastic reductions in population. So in our case, looking at a 15% decrease in population. And this is all based on, like, we have slow migration into the area compared to other states and other parts of our state even. There's actually been a big decline in the fertility rate. We actually had more deaths than births in Ohio, for the first time in the last few years. So all of that leads us to a pretty stark population loss. We also developed a second scenario. And when I say we, so one of the things that was different this time around, instead of doing this internally, we were actually able to work with a consultant on this who specializes in this sort of thing. And we were able to kind of put all the heavy math and stuff into their hands, but just manage the project. But anyway, we have this second scenario, which we call the current trend scenario. And that's really based on the idea of, here's what our region has been doing for the last 20 years. And so if that continues, this is what our region is going to look like. And again, like the other documents we've talked about today, these are between now and 2050. So we have these two scenarios now. And here's kind of what they look like. So the ODOD, negative 15%, current trends forecast actually going up just a little bit. When we look at it by county, things are a little more grim with either scenario in Summit County, which I guess is my second slide. Sorry. So let's start with Portage County. 11% decrease of population with the ODOD forecast, and then a slight increase, about 2.7%, with the current trends forecast. When we're looking at Summit County, those numbers, are a little worse because they're based on how things are actually going. 16% decrease with the ODOD based forecast. And really, it's just about every one of our zones throughout the whole region is decreasing in population with that scenario. Whereas if we do the current trends forecast, we're looking at about a 0.5% decrease. So just kind of in summary, we have these two scenarios. We're going to use the current trend scenario for our own planning, but because we're required to use the ODOD version for the traffic model, like we have that developed too. So it's just two ways to look at this. And so we have the draft report in the mail packet, and we'll be asking our committees for approval in September at our next meetings. So if there are any questions, I or perhaps Seth will be happy to answer them.
Well, again, I don't want to be, again, those numbers are so, if, well, going back to the ODOT, those are like near catastrophic numbers. That's almost like shut the doors and turn out the lights type losses. I mean,
Yeah, but they're
but those.
based on in migration, out migration, births and deaths. And there's a lot of data to indicate that people are not coming into our state and a lot of people are leaving our state. I agree with you. I don't think reality will be nearly that bad, but yeah.
And going back to one of the slides, you said, if I'm recalling right, that the not ODOD, that's the current trends, didn't account for births, deaths, and migration. Those seem like
Correct.
pretty important
Yeah, that
pieces of
second
data.
scenario is just looking at just past census data and kind of extrapolating from there.
Regression.
Okay. Okay, so it's not what you're saying is it's not directly accounting for those. It's to the extent that the census data has those movements built in, you're extrapolating from that data. So, okay,
Yeah.
get it.
And this is all explained if you really want to geek out with any of this. That was a hard draft report for me to review because so much of it is way over my head. There's a lot of math that goes into this, but they did a great job of explaining how they came up with the numbers they did and justified them and everything.
I mean, it seemed like numbers that large had caused panic in Columbus. I mean, how long it can go on with a 15% loss of population
Yeah.
every
Well, and
25
that's
years?
but Columbus is carrying the state. I mean, and Columbus is expected to continue growing. But yeah, they are predicting it to get much worse. And we've been at some meetings and conferences where this kind of stuff has been presented, and like they kind of realize, yeah, this is a big deal, and this could be the start of like a big decline.
Wow.
Any other questions on our draft data forecast?
I like the current trend scenario better.
I think we all do.
Yeah. I'll go with that one.
Okay, so why don't we move on to our freight plan? I'll stop sharing here, and Jeff, if you want, I can put the draft document up on the screen if we need to, but I have that queued up. But Jeff, if you want to talk about what's going on with our freight plan.
Yeah, thank you, Matt. We did a draft freight plan. We do one every 4 years in preparation for the regional transportation plan. In this case, we're working on a 2050 regional transportation plan. It's to fulfill federal requirements, we're required to have a 20-year plus horizon plan out there. So this freight plan is input to that plan. So, we are including it in the mail out and it's linked on the website for your review. We would like your comments. And then in September, we would anticipate taking a revised version or the draft version of the freight plan to the Policy and Tax Committee for their approval in September. And then we can go ahead and use that for use in the 2050 plan. The new freight plan is revised and updated with new data and maps compared to the one from 4 years ago. Everything is updated. We did an analysis of job business hubs in the area, added a couple additional hubs. Those were analyzed for the traffic. and a number of other issues, safety issues, et cetera, for the area. So you can take a look at that. There's additional safety related items included in the freight plan with the discussion of the rail and highway crossings. That's sometimes a dangerous area, and the state of Ohio provides funds to the area to do rail grade separations. You know, you build a bridge so you don't have the cars driving across the railroad tracks. That's been a big issue for ODOT over the years. They've been really providing an incredible amount of money for safety, and that includes rail grade separations. So that's included in the report. There's a discussion of recent changes of the in the freight scene. The discussion would be in terms of highway and rail generally in the freight plan. ODOT did make a huge investment that we talked about a few minutes ago on the freeway system, particularly in the central interchange, and now the very large bridge on State Route 8 near Perkins, north of Perkins. So we are asking that you review the freight plan and provide any comments that you might have to us. Were there any questions?
I did notice a section in the freight plan on the three rail lines owned by Metro RTA,
Yes.
which I think some of us on this call are particularly interested in those rail lines. So yeah, it kind of gave an overview of what's going on with each of those three lines, and I guess the current status with the FTA and Metro RTA. Just curious if you've heard anything new about progress on those discussions between the FTA and Metro RTA, other than what's in the plan.
I don't think any of us have. Am I correct? I feel like we would have all talked if somebody heard something recently.
Yeah, we tried to update that section for as much as we knew presently. Seems like I don't know, somewhere in Chicago or Washington, somebody's not sure what, you know, what they want to do at this point, so they're just kind of waiting.
Yeah, the last we've heard is the appraisal was concluded and we're kind of, but it's been a couple of months since we've talked with Metro specifically about that.
Use the term rail grade separation.
Yes.
Can you tell me what that is?
Oh yeah. A railroad crossing.
Okay.
So the crossing is called at grade, meaning it's at the same level on the surface. To separate the grade would mean that the rail would be on one level and the road would be on a different level. So sometimes they'll build a bridge for the train and sometimes they'll build a bridge for the cars.
You're familiar with Evans Avenue or Evans Road in North Akron, kind of near Talmadge. That's a recent example of where they did a big project to kind of eliminate an at-grade rail crossing. And we outline in the report there's some money that's been thrown into doing this at Hinds Hill Road in Hudson. And they've sent request for more for federal dollars to kind of complete this. But so there's some skin in the game right now with state funding to build a rail bridge to eliminate that at grade crossing.
Yeah, the problem in Hudson sometimes is that the trains actually stop and block the road. In other cases, cars try to beat the train. So by separating, you just eliminate that issue altogether.
But yeah, it's a definitely recommend checking out the draft plan. It's actually kind of an interesting read because it, talks about our different job hubs throughout the region and then just the sections on roadway and railway freight. Just some cool basic information about like what our network looks like, where the railroad tracks go, what different yards do, that kind of stuff. So kind of interesting stuff.
And other than where railroads meet the roads I drive on, AMATS doesn't have anything to do with railroads. Is that right?
Well, yeah, the railroads are almost exclusively private property.
Yeah. Okay.
So we could try to work with them on a number of issues, but I mean, you can't really, it's hard to force the railroad to do anything.
Okay. Our next item is the draft 2024 transit plan, and Matt is going to cover that. He's been working on that.
So the 2024 draft transit plan is basically just an overview of the transit service provided throughout our area. So just examines demographics, travel patterns, and transit service, which has changed since 2020, which is the last time that this plan was updated. So this plan, like other plans today, will help inform and guide the information that we used in the 2050 long-range plan. So if you guys review this, just keep in mind this is just a draft copy. So I'm still complying a few data points with ridership coverage. I'm just kind of confirming some statistics that I have out there with the transit with the transit agencies, and just also a few formatting issues. Those should be highlighted in the draft. So if you see kind of big highlighted sections, I'm probably going to add some pictures or graphs. But yeah, so just a quick overview. We'll have an introduction and then followed by a chapter on the existing systems, which will highlight the general demographics and characteristics of the region and some specific populations that show higher transit usage, such as the elderly population, disability, low income minority, and carless households. So these populations were broken down by census block data and then overlaid with a map of the transit routes to kind of show that the transit routes kind of hit these bigger pockets that show a higher concentration of like lower income minority, carless households. And then within that chapter, we go over the current transit systems with Metro and PARTA. We highlight their assets, ridership of fixed route and demand response programs for both agencies. And then we highlight some of the challenges facing public transit and some of the public outreach and stakeholders transit agencies work with on a regular basis. Then the following chapter will be performance measures that transit agencies must complete. Some of them deal with tracking and reporting of assets, such as the NTD, the National Transit Database, and then also creating transit asset management plans, known as TAM plans. And those mainly deal with maintaining their assets in a state of good repair and just kind of overall tracking. And then also the requirement to develop public transit agency safety plans. And then chapter four is the goals and strategies section. So we steered away from making full recommendations as we feel goals and strategies offer more of a flexible interpretation. And so those goals are broken down into three categories: funding, service, or collaboration goals. So some examples, like invest in transit programs and sustainable fleets, for a funding example, integrate transit into regional transportation plans. So that's a collaboration goal. And just to optimize transit service, which is a service goal. So there's a few other goals in there. I think there's maybe nine total, eight total. And so I'm just looking for a little feedback on this plan. So feel free to reach out to me if you have any comments or questions or feel kind of like I'm missing something. Because there's still a little bit of time to integrate those changes into the final plan, which will be presented next month. Yeah, so that's kind of just an overview of what's going on there.
Any questions for Matt? So we're happy to have Matt's expertise. If anyone remembers, Matt comes to us from Metro. He joined our staff in January, but so he has a lot of direct transit experience. And so this has been one of his first big projects we've had him work on. Take the lead on this report.
I do have a question. It always takes me a minute to unmute myself here, figure out where. And just a little background. Matt Stewart is, like I was telling you, I'm trying to make at Signal Akron Transportation, my lane. So I've been coming to your meetings, going to the metro meetings, going to the airport meetings. So and with respect to the report and the work that you're doing, Matt, are you, does that involve working hand in hand, arm in arm with the, and I'll speak to Metro. I know you're also part of it, Metro folks. Interesting.
So we've had a couple of meetings, and then we've been going back and forth, which is kind of like some of the statistics and information that I need. So just kind of, actually, I'm just kind of going back and forth with Metro on ridership. So you'll notice that part of the report isn't in, but I know that there will be a pretty detailed report kind of going back to 2019, and we're going to take each individual route. And just kind of figuring out how to display that. And it's just kind of really interesting that just the level of ridership really dipped in 2020, and obviously it's just been steadily
Steadily
increasing
increasing.
since then. And that's just kind of mirror. And then I have a kind of a graph that kind of just that's mirroring with Metro and MPARTA, that's mirroring national trends. And both of them have said that they're kind of expecting to reach 100% recovery or close to that in the next year and a half, but that's just kind of just speculating just based on how the numbers are going. But yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I have more questions, but what I'm going to do is read the report first in detail
Yeah,
and make it
for sure.
have
Yeah,
an
and
input
then
everybody's time here.
no, feel free to reach out to me. Yeah. Always looking for more feedback.
Was telling Matt Stewart I got to drive a bus the other day.
Oh, yeah. How'd you do? Did you crash it?
No, it was
Okay,
in the
good.
parking lot
Good.
over at Stark
The
State
Stark
there
State,
at the job
yeah.
fair. Yeah, so they made it easy for me.
Good. Yeah, no, I stayed clear of that. I'm just like, you don't need me driving a bus. I'm good.
Okay,
That's good.
well, our last item on the agenda also has to do with transit. And Jeff, I know you were going to originally report this, but then maybe Matt was. So who would like to talk about our discussion of fiscal year 25 public transit program of projects?
Oh,
Who's
I'll
it?
arm wrestle. You want me to arm wrestle you for it? Virtual arm wrestle
I
for
can, I can.
it?
So, yeah, the program of projects, also known as the POP, it's something both transit agencies are required to submit based on receiving 5307 formula funds, which is apportioned to our Akron urbanized area, which makes up Summit, Portage, and portions of Wayne, and actually Medina and Stark County are considered in Akron UZA region for 5307. But only Metro and MPARTA receive those fundings because they offer, they're the only ones that are urban transit agencies that offer service within the region. And so our Akron area gets a little under $10 million. And then that's split between the two transit agencies based on population, low income data, and ridership. And then these projects, these program of projects, the projects that they submit usually are bus replacement. I know in this year they have bus replacement. For Metro and MPARTA, large bus replacement. And then for MPARTA, it's large and small buses. And then both have preventative maintenance. Metro has added their larger construction projects in. It's not technically 5307 formula funding, but they did put their large new maintenance building project, which was a bus and bus facility award. So that was a discretionary award. But that's just they also include all of the federal funding projects that are they're going to do in that fiscal year. So it's not only just necessarily 5307 projects, but those projects can be found on our local TIP, which is on our website. Those projects are always constantly evolving. As this, as you can see, we have an amendment. Metro added some funds for this August meeting. And then also, if you want to request further information on any of those FTA projects, you can definitely reach out to Metro and MPARTA or IMATS as well. Did you have to add any? Do you think of anything, Jeff, there to
Never.
that?
I
All right,
wouldn't
good. All
change
right,
one
no.
single
All
word.
right, good.
Good job, Matt.
All right.
All right, any questions on that? Okay, well, before we adjourn, We have time for open discussion if anyone has any questions or things that they want to bring up for the good of the order.
I'll bring one up.
Okay.
We met with you and Curtis Baker at the Rubber City Heritage Trail dedication event. It has a very fine dedication. And I had a brief conversation with Curtis, and he said he, with regards to the trails, especially the Veterans Trail, and he said he was hearing all kinds of proposals now for things other than multi-purpose trails. I think he mentioned commuter rail and maybe expanded freight service. I was hoping Curtis was going to be here today and that he would be able to elaborate on that. Are you able to comment on that at all? Things that are being discussed with regards to the abandoned rail lines that are being proposed for multi-purpose trail now?
No, no specifics. I don't know, Matt or Jeff, if you have anything to add. I mean, all I know is that there has been, you know, through this appraisal process and next steps, like they have to evaluate like all possible uses for that corridor, including recreational trails. But I don't think there's anything specific in the works, unless you know what I'm thinking as I'm talking here. There has been. There has kind of been this rejuvenated talk of like there are some people that are really wanting to be on this statewide, they call it the 3C, Cleveland, Columbus, Cincinnati rail. And now it's the 3C plus D, so D being Dayton. And there's been kind of a push lately, like, hey, can Akron get in on this? The big challenge, and if you look at Jeff's freight report, Jeff and Seth's freight report, and you look at the map of our rail lines, you'll see there's really no easy way. We're not really on the way taking like a class one railroad into our area and then being part of that 3C line. There's just not like a great way. So there has been some generic discussion of what are different ways we could get commuter rail into our area? In my opinion, I think it's a long shot at best. And I also think that the Veterans Line, even though that might be one that's talked about, is probably an even longer shot. But that's probably what Curtis was alluding to. So those discussions are kind of in the very early stages, and we're at this point kind of just, you know, along for the ride and trying to work with agencies that ask us to pull data for them and that kind of thing. But I know like the county has been talking about it. Amelia Sykes's office has been really trying to get something going. They've pulled in, not the Chamber of Commerce, I can't remember the name of the organization,
Greater Akron,
but those, yeah, it's not
like fun for economic future, maybe.
No, it's not them. But there are some agencies that are starting to talk about this, and they've written letters to, you know, ODOT Director Marchbanks and, you know, saying, hey, we want to be part of this, but there's a lot of studying that needs to be done. And I think it's a long shot just because of the geography of our area. And, you know, if we're talking about the veterans, you know, where the future veterans trail is, like the rail there, just
so many individual easements you would have to do through like Silver Lake would just be a nightmare.
And a lot of the rail that we're looking at that comes into the region that could ostensibly connect to, you know, Cleveland or to Columbus, we're not talking like class one rail lines, you know, like the CSX and the NS main line and stuff. We're talking what were kind of short line railroads that, you know, have tighter curves and, you know, so all to say, like, it's early on. We'll see where it goes. And I wouldn't worry too much about like the Veterans Trail being co-opted for passenger commuter use. I think that's extremely unlikely, but stay tuned.
When I think about that, that right of way for the Veterans Trail, that the difficulty, one difficulty I see is there's all the residential properties that back up against it.
Yep.
But then where it terminates is at the Norfolk Southern line. And to me, that seems difficult because that's heavily used for freight. And how do you coordinate commuter rail on a freight line without having like a doodlebug thing happen? But yet you have the other line that used to be the CSX line. It's now owned by the government. It's used for the Cuyahoga Valley Scenic Railroad. That's a direct connection right into downtown Cleveland almost. That seems like a possibility there. I'm sure it'd take a lot of upgrading to eliminate
Oh, yeah.
crossings, things like that, but that's actually an active rail line at this point. Just my thought on it. You mentioned somebody's writing letters to ODOT. Agencies are writing letters. Is there some place we could see those letters or find them, do a FOIA request or?
Yeah, I don't know the specific, I can't remember. I know that some letters have been written and I can't remember who wrote them though. I don't know if that was, it may have been through Amelia Sykes's office, just saying we'd like to study this further. So I might recommend, check with her office and just say, hey, what's going on with this idea of commuter rail?
Good thought. Actually, Austin and I have had some communication with Michaela Hawley, who's the outreach director for Amelia Sykes, and
Okay.
she's gotten involved in support for the Veterans Trail. So maybe we could follow up through
Great.
that.
Okay.
And a second item, if I could continue, you and I, Matt, had a discussion about doing a cost-benefit analysis for the Veterans Trail, and I sent you a study that was done in the East Coast somewhere where they looked at numerous factors, and they had a consultant actually prepare those estimates. We talked about hiring a consultant to do it, and that seems kind of problematic to find somebody to fund something like that unless you have some new comments.
Yeah, that's what I wanted to talk to you about. I talked with Curtis about it. We put our heads together and tried. I think just as I told you last week, like really the only source we would have is our Connecting Communities program, and that's really more for planning stuff. Like I don't even, Heather, I don't even think we'd be able to, like, just the strings attached from the feds and ODOT with that money, I don't think we could do like a market analysis, even if we wanted to. Plus, that's not really the intent of that funding. So we don't have any sources, but the best thought we had was, that could possibly be something that you could shop around and see if you could get like a foundation grant for, like the Knight Foundation or, the other one is kind of escaping me, but there are different community foundations that sometimes will fund just all sorts of random things. You might be able to knock on those doors a little and see if you could get some money to do something like that.
Are you
That was
thinking
really our
GAR?
best guess. What's that, Heather?
GAR? Is it GAR Foundation? Is that what you're thinking of, or no?
Yeah, I said GAR.
GAR,
Oh, you
okay.
did too? Akron Community Foundation.
Yeah, but you're right. I don't believe that planning grants, this would not, that type of thing would not be funded through a planning grant.
Well, here's another thought that occurred to me since we had that conversation. Is that something that AMAT could do? You are the
No,
hold
we
on,
are
Akron
not
Metropolitan Area
economic, market.
Transportation Study. Do a
Yeah.
study. Well,
You would not want us doing a market analysis, Ron. We'd be making up, we'd be just figuring it out as we go.
Well, that's what anybody's going to have to do is make assumptions about what could be.
Yeah, but there are, I did look at that study from Maine that you sent me, and like there are, I don't know who does stuff like that, but there are firms that are qualified to do that kind of thing. As for how much it costs and how you go about doing that, I don't know. But if you're looking for money for something like that, I think a foundation is probably your best bet. I don't know how likely that is. It seems like an interesting project, and maybe that would work.
We actually subscribe to something called Grant Watch that notifies us of all the grants that are out there and what their purposes are. So we have the ability to do that, and we probably will. But I'm hearing kind of loud and clear that AMAS would not take on something like that.
Yeah, we to be quite honest, we just couldn't. That's not our wheelhouse.
Not part of your charter.
Yeah, correct. That's just not our expertise. We don't, that's not something that our staff has expertise in.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you.
Sure. Any other questions or comments?
One quick question. Going back to commuter rail, I've come across that abandoned track station kind of behind the Quaker Square parking lot. Do you all know what route Amtrak took when it previously ran through Akron?
I believe, Jeff, you probably know, but I believe
Cleveland
that was
to
on. Oh, go ahead.
Akron to Pittsburgh. That's the CSX line. I mean, it's a freight line, so they had to run it at odd times. I think it stopped at Akron at, like, I don't
One
know,
in the morning or
1:30.
three in the
Yeah, 1:30
morning.
in the morning. So.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, well, thank you everybody for joining us tonight. If you have any questions as you look through our documents or just other random questions that pop up, you know where to find us. And if not, we'll see you next time.